You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
On CFRO 102.7 FM, Co-op Radio in Vancouver. Do you think the United States should bomb Iran? That's the question of the night, and this is Radio EcoShock, your source for environment news. For a generation now, thousands of people, tens of thousands of people, and even hundreds of thousands of people have marched in the streets and demonstrated against the use of war and against the use, in particular, of nuclear weapons. And now there is talk again in the United States in major newspapers, including the Los Angeles Times and a whole bevy of others, about the American need to bomb Iran right away and use nuclear weapons if necessary. And those calls are being echoed by some in the Israeli press as well. Tonight we have a stellar lineup of people to talk to you about this issue. We have a dialogue from New York City with Scott Ritter, the former weapons inspector, who quite wisely advised us there were no nuclear weapons or weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Too bad the American media and the president didn't listen to that. And he's joined by Seymour Hersh, the New Yorker columnist, who has brought out a new article called The Last Act, in which he brings forth the possibility that a lame duck administration of Bush and Cheney may go ahead and attack Iran anyway, as crazy as that sounds. We'll add to that the voice of the Iranian woman intellectual, Golbard Bashi, who will tell us that don't do it for us. Don't go ahead and bomb Iran in order to help women's issues, because violence and chaos brought on by war never help women in any instance. And we'll also have a quick input from Heidi of Iranian Women's Voices right here on CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver. But before we get to that, I want to run a feature created for Radio EcoShock last spring and still as valid as ever, and it's called Four Plots to Nuke Iran.
In case of emergency, nuke Iran. You know, like break glass, only murder people by the millions.
Down in the polls? Just nuke Iran. This is news from Radio EcoShock. According to Seymour Hersh, in April's New Yorker magazine, a faction in the Bush administration has plans to use nuclear bombs against targets in Iran. The pretext is to stop the Iranians from developing a nuclear bomb. The precedent breaks 60 years of nuclear peace to drop the first atomic weapon in anger since the incineration of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. 60 years of marches, lobbying, and struggle by people all over the world opposed to nuclear weapons might come undone soon. The president who brought you secret detention camps, torture, spying, and unprovoked war against a country has plans for a new atomic age of terror. In a world of conspiracy and violence, we'll cover four major theories of why America will nuke Iran. First, the Jewish people are terrified that Iran will wipe out Israel with nuclear missiles, a horrible second Holocaust. Then, there are stories that Vice President Cheney has plans to nuke Iran following any 9/11 type incident in America, whether Iran did it or not. Third, we'll look at the hidden plot line of oil, how Iran is threatening America's passion to control Middle East oil and the American dollar itself. Finally, the neocons from the Council on Foreign Relations think America shouldn't stop with a nuclear attack on Iranian atomic plants and labs. These intellectuals and their banking friends see a great opportunity. Thinking they now have nuclear supremacy, America should just nuke every atomic weapon site in the world, including the Russians and the Chinese. Total victory! Total domination! All published in the March-April issue of the magazine, Foreign Affairs. We'll get to that. Let's begin with Seymour Hersh, speaking to ABC Radio in Australia.
If you really want to guarantee that you're going to get rid of the major underground facility in Iran that's believed to be tied to nuclear activity, a place called Natanz, which is 75 feet underground, if you want to be sure, the only way to be sure is with a tactical nuke. This is one of the options given in an option paper by the Joint Chiefs of Staff to the White House. Nobody was advocating it. They were just saying 100% guarantee. Where it becomes interesting, the Joint Chiefs, in one of its subsequent papers, wanted to withdraw that option because, of course, it's madness. A nuclear weapon in the Middle East to an Arab Muslim country, my God. And the White House wouldn't withdraw it. And that's the issue, that the White House, some people there, still wanted to have this option.
Mr. Hersh also revealed the Abu Ghraib prison scandal, not to mention his Pulitzer Prize revelations of the My Lai massacre during the Vietnam War.
You can find more in Slate Magazine, an article by Fred Kaplan, April 10th, titled, Are We Really Going to Nuke Iran? Fred Kaplan wonders if this is just another version of Richard Nixon's Let Them Think I'm a Madman strategy in Vietnam. We saw how successful that was. Iran isn't buying it, and they have a president who also qualifies as a madman. Madmen, my friends, are threatening the Earth. This nuclear bravado, perhaps purposely leaked by the United States, is meant to hammer on Europe to make them consider sanctions seriously. We saw how well sanctions worked in Iraq. Meanwhile, alleged high-level sources within the U.S. military say there is active resistance to the idea, and some generals will resign if the government moves toward the nuclear option. In the event an order is given to drop a nuclear weapon for the first time since Hiroshima, we may all end up hoping a military coup will displace Bush and his neocon gang. Our time's already so desperate that the world prays the military men will revolt, as they did against Hitler in 1944. Of course, the nuclear story may be a cover to make us all feel better when the Bush boys attack Iran with conventional weapons. We'll all be relieved they didn't start a nuclear war yet. According to Hirsch, the Navy has been flying simulated nuclear bombing missions for more than a year, launched from aircraft carriers in the Arabian Sea. They are practicing delivery of weapons of mass destruction.
Plot number one.
Drop the bomb to stop the bomb.
Let's start with Israel. In 2002, Bush declared Iran to be part of the Axis of Evil, a phrase coined by the Canadian speechwriter David Frum. News about a nuclear attack on Iran has been brewing since the start of 2005. In March 30, 2005, Scott Ritter, the former weapons inspector in Iraq, wrote, Sleepwalking to Disaster in Iran. It was published in the Arab news agency Al Jazeera. Contacted by someone close to the Bush administration, Ritter claims he was warned of a plan to attack Iran in June 2005 because the Israelis were worried about Iran's nuclear enrichment program. Well, now, that enrichment program has produced its first batch of weapons-grade uranium. The heat is on. Since the Iranian president said Israel should be wiped off the map, while questioning the Holocaust and pushing Jewish hatred, the Israeli and Jewish people everywhere have plenty of cause for sleepless nights. The Iranians have already demonstrated a missile capable of delivering a nuclear payload to Israel or even to southern Europe. Israel's Minister of Defense of the day, Shaul Mofaz, said, quote, Under no circumstances would Israel be able to tolerate nuclear weapons in Iranian possession, end quote. Israel itself is thought to have at least 200 nuclear weapons. Contemplating the possibility that a few nuclear missiles could render the Holy Land into atomic dust, being such a small country, Israel loudly announced they had refitted conventional submarines with underwater nuclear missile launch capabilities. Obviously, if Israel was struck by weapons of mass destruction, the Jewish state would respond from under the sea, wiping out large Muslim cities and holy places in the Middle East. We have a precedent for Israeli first strike against Muslim atomic power. In the mid-1980s, the Israeli Air Force used modified American planes to bomb a nuclear power facility in Iraq, built by France, just days before the reactor was due to start up. The Bush administration may be in a forced race with Israel to destroy Iranian nuclear facilities before the Israelis do it. According to Scott Ritter, Israel had a plan to destroy Iranian nuclear facilities since 2003. These relationships are so complex, they may be moving beyond anyone's control. When nuclear fear sets policy, policy goes mad. Ritter said, The American media today is sleepwalking toward an American war with Iran.
We do have a saying in America, if you're in a hole, stop digging. Not sure I should have said that.
Plot number two.
Our second nukem plot is not based on Israel, but arises from American internal problems. The Project for a New American Century, or PNAC, already described the need for a new Pearl Harbor to instigate a stronger state. Now, the president and his gun-toting buddy are so low in the polls, they may think only of another 9/11-type attack to bring back public support. We know that the Bush insider gang plotted an attack on Iraq even before they came into office. 9/11 allowed them to do it, even though Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. If there's another attack, says intelligence analyst Philip Giraldi, Vice President Cheney has nuclear battle plans ready to attack Iran, whether they were guilty or not. They are waiting for an excuse to seize total control of Middle East oil and to repay the Iranians for seizing the American embassy in 1979. We hear more about the Cheney nuke mousetrap from right-wing sources, people you would expect to be Bush supporters. For example, Justin Logan of the Cato Institute at www.justinlogan.com reprints key paragraphs from Philip Giraldi's article in American Conservative magazine, which is not available online. In print, Giraldi says, quote, "The Pentagon, acting under instructions from Vice President Dick Cheney's office, has tasked the United States Strategic Command, STRATCOM, with drawing up a contingency plan to be employed in response to another 9/11-type terrorist attack on the United States. The plan includes a large-scale air assault on Iran, employing both conventional and tactical nuclear weapons. Within Iran, there are more than 450 major strategic targets, including numerous suspected nuclear weapons program development sites. Many of the targets are hardened or are deep underground and could not be taken out by conventional weapons, hence the nuclear option. As in the case of Iraq, the response is not conditional on Iran actually being involved in the act of terrorism directed against the United States." Several senior Air Force officers involved in the planning are reportedly appalled at the implications of what they are doing, that Iran is being set up for an unprovoked nuclear attack, but no one is prepared to damage his career by posing any objections. End quote.
The Cheney doctrine from last summer is there's going to be a new 9/11, it's going to be blamed on Iran automatically,
right,
and it will be the basis of an atomic attack on Iran. And that's the perspective under which these people have been working. And it has a wag the dog component, of course. It gets the crumbling of the Bush administration off the front page.
Some of these so-called hardened targets are right in the capital of the country, Tehran. Shall we nuke the capital of Iran? This would please the Osama bin Laden crowd. As Sunnis, they loathe the Iranian Shiites almost as much as Americans. If Sunni radicals could stage another 9/11 incident, the American Goliath will nuke their enemies for them.
Yeah, well, you just leave a bunch of dead people behind and all their relatives angry.
Let's hear from Gilardi himself, speaking with Scott Horton, an anti-war activist at anti-war.com, speaking on the quite conservative Republican Broadcasting Network on July 26, 2005.
And I'm talking with Philip Giraldi. He's a former CIA counterterrorism official, now writes deep background for the American Conservative magazine. And, sir, you were saying before the break...
Well, basically, some officers in the Air Force are talking about a contingency plan that is being drawn up at the instructions of the White House, more specifically the Office of the Vice President. And the plan, essentially, is for a nuclear response against Iran if there is another major terrorist incident in the United States, something along the lines of 9/11. The thinking, the scary thing about this, the Dr. Strangelove aspect of it, is that the thinking that's going down here is basically that you would use the opportunity of a terrorist attack to take out Iran as basically a threat in that region. I don't have to explain to you that the policy in that region has been insane right from 4 years ago.
Dick Cheney's got a gun. Dick Cheney's got a gun. The safety's come undone. He's squinting in the Texas sun. What did our leader do? Who'd he put a bullet through? They say when Cheney goes to Texas, you'll find him hunting fish and game.
This Cheney has a plan chatter became intense last summer in 2005. Now it's back. Why?
Plot number three.
We move to a nuclear motive that American media don't seem to cover. It's all about the control of oil and money. Deep in their own hardened mental bunkers, executives of oil companies, chemical makers, and automakers want to own Middle East oil supplies forever, whatever it takes.
It's all about the price of oil. It's all about the price of oil.
We'll hear a theory that the real motive to attack Iran is not the protection of Israel, but a desperate attempt to stop an Iranian oil trading scheme that could jeopardize the American dollar and reroute American oil to China instead. Our speaker here is Webster Tarpley, a so-called 9/11 conspiracy theorist and author of 9/11 Synthetic Terror. We have to be careful with Webster Tarpley, as he was for many years the public spokesman for the Lyndon LaRouche Group. LaRouche was hostile to environmentalism. He named Greenpeace as his enemy, hired his people out to the nuclear industry as spies, and admired German Nazi scientists just a little too much. LaRouche ended up being jailed by George Bush Sr. for defrauding old ladies of their fortunes. Tarpley seems to have reinvented himself, although he is part of a group which includes talk show host Alex Jones, who still interpret the world by the LaRouchean idea. A conspiracy of global control by elites that include European royalty, the Rockefellers, and, of course, the Jewish Rothschilds. Nevertheless, speaking about the American dollar and Iran, Tarpley seems to make sense. Let's give him a listen.
And that brings us to the big threat, which is this Iranian oil bourse, which was supposed to open on March 20th, which has been delayed by various kinds of, I think, technical difficulties, political difficulties that the U.S. and the British have thrown up. Remember that this would be the first open market or exchange or bourse since 1945, really, where you could buy oil for a currency other than the dollar. It would be the euro. Since the end of the Second World War, the rule has been if you want oil, you must have dollars, meaning that whoever controls the dollars, i.e. the U.S. Federal Reserve and Treasury and the London Eurodollar market, if they have the dollars, they control the oil, and it doesn't matter so much who nominally or seems to own the oil. It's really in the pocket of the U.S. and the British. And this, of course, has been another way to create a completely artificial demand for dollars by saying, if you want to buy oil from Iran or Saudi Arabia or Indonesia, you've got to have dollars. That's the only way. That means that there's a tremendous demand for dollars that otherwise wouldn't be there.
So, if Iran were allowed to create a new way to sell oil in euros or just straight trade for consumer goods from someone like, China, the financial stability of America might be endangered by a further decay or even a run on the dollar. Better bomb them first. The Chinese recently sealed a deal with Iran to buy $100 billion worth of oil. Will intense competition for oil start an undeclared war with the United States and China held in proxy countries like Iran, just as America and the Soviet Union fought in Angola and Vietnam?
Plot number 4.
Finally, we come to an open and published plot where America uses thousands of nuclear weapons to neutralize all others and gain total control of the world. This may sound like something from the old cartoon Pinky and the Brain, but it comes from the periodical Foreign Affairs, the mouthpiece of the elite intellectuals, politicians, and bankers on the Council on Foreign Relations, the CFR. Webster Tarpley, speaking at the beginning of April 2006.
But even more immediately, this question of the nuclear first strike, the article, and
yes.
I urge people to read this because this is absolutely chilling. Foreign Affairs, the issue is March-April 06. It's called The Rise of U.S. Nuclear Primacy by Keir A. Lieber, L-I-E-B-E-R, and Daryl G. Press, P-R-E-S-S. One of them, let's see, Lieber is from Notre Dame, Daryl G. Press, University of Pennsylvania, and they're telling you that the Russian nuclear deterrent is now decaying. It's collapsing, they say. It has been radically cut in all three of its legs.
Standing back just a little, it is amazing how the United States is going from productivity to rank decay and the hubris of empire in just a generation. It's like watching the Romans fall in a couple of decades. So predictable, but with nuclear weapons ripe with terminally ugly possibilities. For these American intellectual thugs writing in Foreign Affairs, so distant from the seared bodies in Hiroshima, Russia's actions to disarm are seen as decay. And China's hesitancy to spend billions on the lunacy of horrible nuclear weapons, and rather to educate and feed their people, is seen as weakness, as an invitation to bomb the hell out of this historically peaceful people. In a paper presented at a Berlin conference on the Middle East in March, Colonel Sam Gardner, a military analyst who taught at the National War College before retiring from the Air Force in 1987, described the necessary targets to neutralize nuclear technology in Iran. there were 400 targets, and that didn't include the chemical plants and other goodies the U.S. and Israel would like to remove. Hirsch says that military men, as high as the Joint Chiefs of Staff, are now advising the president against using nuclear weapons in any form. They're opposed by the Defense Science Board, a contraption whose members are all appointed by the Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld himself. This board thinks science can deliver a tidy nuclear weapon with limited radiation to use anywhere. Just a few little nuclear bombs, no big worry. The Bush administration is advised by men appointed by the Bush administration. They listen only to themselves. Many of these men who approve of helpful nuclear weapons have been appointed to key posts in the administration. As Hirsch tells us, they include, quote, Stephen Hadley, the National Security Advisor, Stephen Cambone, the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence, and Robert Joseph, the Undersecretary of State for Arms Control and International Security. All these were members of the Defense Science Board. When nuclear bombing to get your way becomes state policy, there are strange twists. America itself taught Iran how to build the bomb. The crazy scheme, approved by President Bill Clinton, delivered the blueprints for a nuclear bomb to Iranian physicists. It was called Operation Merlin. The joke was, there was a hidden error in the plans that would kill the bomb makers. But Iran was not in a vacuum. They consulted the Russians, who corrected the error for them. Now the plans were complete. Thank you, America. This is a central fact of all nuclear madness. Those who develop new weapons of horror always leak and lead the way for many others to follow. The weapons come home. They blow a hole in our lives and our psyches and our cities. The radiation is shared by everyone on the globe and by countless innocent generations to come. This crop of madmen take us to the brink of species suicide. When the first nuclear bomb is dropped, no matter how small and tidy, and a mushroom cloud appears anywhere in the Middle East, well, it's time to meet your new friends, the Hezbollah, the army of God, who managed to defeat Israel and move them out of Lebanon. These are the people who will be soon arriving on America's door with whatever weapons they may find, whether nuclear or biological. The genie is out of the box. Anybody can make a nuke for any reason. No city can feel safe. Here is the father of physics, of our knowledge of the universe and the bomb, Albert Einstein.
The physicists who participated in forging the most formidable and dangerous weapon of all time cannot desist from warning, and warning again. We cannot and should not slacken in our efforts to make the nations of the world, and especially their governments, aware of the unspeakable disaster they are certain to provoke, unless they change their attitude towards each other and towards the task of shaping the future.
The physicists who participate in watching the most formidable and dangerous weapon of all times cannot resist from warning and warning again. We cannot and should not slacken in our efforts to make the nations of the world, and especially their governments, aware of the unspeakable disaster they are certain to provoke, unless they change their attitudes toward each other and toward the task of shaping the future. So said Albert Einstein. Nuclear technology is out there for anyone to find. Crude plans were on the internet for years. Children learn Einsteinian secrets at their parents' knees. University physics classes create new potential bomb makers every day in many parts of the world. The black market is filled with people selling plans and materials. The only and last remaining dike against awful incineration is this. No one has been crazy enough to use one. No one, it seems, until now. This wake-up call to those who love life and peace comes from Radio EcoShock at www.ecoshock.org. Tune in to free, full-time, all-environment radio.
Britain's Foreign Secretary Jack Straw has today commented on the reports of using nuclear weapons to attack Iran. He called such a plan completely nuts.
You're listening to Radio EcoShock every Friday at 1 o'clock on CFRO 102.7 FM, Co-op Radio in Vancouver.
The bombing or invasion of Iran would be a horror for the nation's women, despite the claims made by some think tanks and professionals that they would be liberating women. Let us hear from Goldbard Bashi, who is a visiting scholar at Columbia University, She was speaking at Northwestern University with a speech called Iranian Women and the Impact of a Possible War. It was presented by Neighbors for Peace and recorded by WZRD. In the 19-minute speech, Gulbarg Bashi, who is actually a Swedish-Iranian intellectual woman, described how Iraqi women have suffered after the invasion, and even how Iranian women have suffered after minor civil disturbances such as the great earthquake that happened a few years ago.
Never have Iranian women, though, forget about self-serving, pathetic, oppositional groups outside Iran or career opportunist characters in U.S. think tanks. Forget about those. But Iranian women themselves inside Iran have never called or asked for foreign involvement in their demands for achieving democracy and equality in Iran, other than appeals to international human rights groups and NGOs. In fact, Iranian women activists have refused to accept U.S. aid, and Shirin Ebadi, the distinguished Iranian recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize in the field of defending human rights, has repeatedly announced that while she and her fellow activists continue to oppose and fight Iran's gender apartheid system, they would never support, but in fact would fight a U.S.-led assault on their homeland. So as we see, there's an active, independent, sophisticated, and uncompromising women's movement inside this theocracy that the Fox News and the CNN and the Bush administration repeatedly calls the greatest threat to world peace. Women in Iran go about their daily life. They are the cornerstones of Iranian democratic movement, and while they live under hardship, they have hopes in subverting this hardship by their own bare hands. And there are at least no bombs being dropped from the sky, no homes, schools, universities, hospitals, bridges or factories being destroyed, no lives or limbs are being lost, no friends, cousins, mothers, fathers, brothers or husbands are being killed, and no criminal gangs or an occupying army is threatening their security in the streets. Their water, their environment, and their food supply isn't polluted by any bombs, God forbid, a chemical or nuclear bomb made in the United States, nor is their cultural heritage looted or their paychecks burned. So in a vast country such as Iran, where like all societies, domestic violence, rape, and more increasingly the trafficking of poor women is common, a war would mean a humanitarian catastrophe, not only for individual women and girls, but for women as a collective force in the democratization of the country. Setbacks in all their efforts for political, legal, and cultural gains would perish with the first bomb that would be dropped by any foreign country on their homeland. All the energy and attention would be diverted to safeguarding the nation, and in the vast nation, women and girls will be forgotten and trampled upon. The Christian right Bush administration, self-serving native informers, the Iranian Chalabis of this world, oppositional groups, think tank experts, do not have the interests of women, especially working class and poor women in mind, but the interests of corporate and capital that provides them with lucrative grants. So what is alarming for any human rights, women's rights, or anti-war activist in this country is that in all the recent wars, the new Khan doctrine has been adopted to persuade the public into going to war in the name of democracy and the liberation of Muslim women. This claim is categorically false and indeed criminal. Not only are the intentions of going to war not in order to promote any such a thing as human rights or democracy, however one can achieve this by bombing a nation into it, the consequences of such wars are catastrophic setbacks and direct crimes against women's human rights and for humanity at large. As committed activists, our task is not allowing the women's rights issue or the matter of democracy to get hijacked by warmongers. It is our duty to oppose and expose the cause of women and or the marginalized from being used by statesmen, military men, native informers, posing as feminist human rights activists, scholars, for acts of violence. We must ask ourselves if these statesmen, military people, native informers, if they really believe in the full emancipation of women in their own countries. We must ask, does Rumsfeld and Paul Wolfowitz really care for black and poor women in New Orleans before they go on to liberate these women? (Clears throat) One and the same with the Bush administration's appropriation of women's rights talk on behalf of Afghan women or women in the U.S. military. In a fragile civil society such as Iran, the last thing women or Iranians need in their noble struggle for democracy is an illegitimate and immoral American-led war. Our nightmare now is that Iranian women and girls may not only have to deal with their daily hardships of life under a theocracy, but may indeed have to bear the terrorizing consequences of a U.S.-led invasion. With all the implications for women I just explained in the Iraqi situation, left to their own devices, Iranian women, as elsewhere, will surely pave the way for democratic societies one day. Thank you.
That was Swedish-Iranian intellectual Gulbarg Bashi arguing against the use or abuse of the women's rights argument as an excuse to bomb Iran or to invade it.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
Join us every Friday at 1 o'clock on CFRO 102.7 FM, Co-op Radio in Vancouver.
Well, I'm speaking with Heidi, and you've just finished your show on CFRO, Iranian Women's Voices, and that's all in Farsi, is it?
Yes.
And what is your purpose for the show?
We have many purposes. Anything, we are our Iranian voice in here, which we didn't have a voice in our country for many, many issues.
I understand. And I'm covering now, there are calls in American newspapers to attack Iran, your country. And I understand from talking to you that you have lived in wartime conditions before. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Yeah, I used to live south of my country, which is border of Iraq and Iran, top of those oil fields, and there are always worries. And I have a very, very, very bad experience for 8-9 years under heavy, heavy bombardment every day, many times a day, from early morning till evening.
And meanwhile, you're trying to raise a family and get kids to school?
Yeah, so just, yeah, right now they're grown up, but just reminding all those bombardment are just awful. It was awful. We used to live close to some river, and we couldn't use the shelters. I don't know why they're talking about bombardment so easy.
Yes, because there are real people underneath those bombs, and I think that's what we have to remember. Now, I wanted to ask you, we've talked to an intellectual who has said dropping bombs or attacking Iran is no way to help the women of the country, that violence always ends up hurting women. How do you feel about that?
I feel that many ways. I'm a mother, I was a sister, I was a daughter, I was a wife, I was a neighbor, I was relative, I was a friend. Many, many, many ways affect me. I used to help volunteer at hospital, oil company hospital. And as you can see, many times, many numbers affect us.
And all those are people that you care about who could be hurt in an attack.
Yes. I have a sister, two sisters over there. I have relatives. I have friends. It doesn't matter. Whoever, I don't know them.
And so could you say a few words in Farsi to people who may be listening about your program so they'll know how to tune into it?
More Iranian woman voice, Hastings. صدای زنهای ایرانی هست توی ونکوور از کوآپ رادیو روزهای سه شنبه هر سه شنبه از ساعت 5 تا 6 بعد از ظهر از رادیو کوآپ روی موج اف ام ردیف 102.7 پخش میشه و ما در مورد همه چیز پالیتیک، در مورد همه چیز، تمام ایشوهایی که در مورد زن هاست، تمام همه چیز صحبت میکنیم تا اونجایی که به اون چیزی که در مورد این دنیا اتفاق میفته ما در جریان میذاریم همه رو.
Well, thank you. So people can hear the real voice of Iranian women in Farsi on Co-op Radio every Tuesday between 5 and 6 o'clock Pacific time. And for those who are listening outside of the Vancouver, Canada area, you can tune in by going to cooperadio.org/listen and tune in there every Tuesday to hear the voices of Iranian women. Thank you very much for talking with us, Heidi.
You're welcome.
My concern is that we will use nuclear weapons to break the backbone of Iranian resistance, and it may not work. But what it will do is this. It will unleash the nuclear genie. And so for all those Americans out there tonight who say, you know what, taking on Iran's a good thing. I just told you, if we take on Iran, we're going to use nuclear weapons. And if we use nuclear weapons, the genie ain't going back in the bottle until an American city is taken out by an Islamic weapon in retaliation. So tell me, you want to go to war with Iran? Pick your city. And that's something we should all think about before we march down this path of insanity that George Bush has us headed on.
The idea of Iran having a nuclear weapon is unacceptable. And it's unacceptable to the United States, and it's unacceptable to the nations we're working with in the United Nations.
The CIA says there's no evidence that Iran is doing anything that puts them close to a bomb. There's no secret program of significant bomb making.
By the way, what you're reading is wild speculation.
I would never underestimate Mr. Cheney.
In the spring of 2006, the celebrated journalist Seymour Hersh warned the United States was considering using nuclear weapons to wipe out suspected Iranian nuclear processing sites. Now, the tide appears to have turned against the neocon warmongers. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld has resigned over failures and scandals in Iraq. The Democrats have regained control of both the House and the Senate. Yet Hersh is back in the late November issue of the New Yorker magazine, saying an attack on Iran is still possible, perhaps inevitable. Many of the Democrats supported military action against Iran, including Hillary Clinton. Some of the new Democrats are actually hardliners, despite obvious public distaste for further military adventures. There is a flurry of diplomatic activity to bring Syria and other former enemies together into a new coalition. Suddenly, Dick Cheney rushed off to see the leaders of Saudi Arabia, the land that provided 19 of the 9/11 hijackers and financing for Al-Qaeda, along with the CIA, of course. Why? Because the Middle East is spinning out of control toward a new axis of power. The Shiite faction of Islam, centered in Iran, seems likely to take over the irate state of Lebanon following Israel's unilateral war against them. The Shia are already dominant in Iraq, in both the government, military, and paramilitary. There is a rest of Shia faction in the very oil fields of Saudi Arabia itself. To defend its perceived vital oil interests against their own blunders, we may see a new alliance of everyone who hates and fears the Shiites, the United States, Israel, and the embattled Sunnis, welded into a coalition held together only by their common enemy. We may be poised in the last chaos before a war against Iran. And waiting in the background are two giants. Russia, the largest provider of Iranian arms, and China, the world's fastest growing economy, completely dependent on recent $100 billion oil deals with Tehran. Unbelievably, the public trigger for this attack may be weapons of mass destruction, even though all parties are agreed Iran does not possess them. Nuclear weapons may be used to blow up hardened underground facilities or to bail out an invasion army that gets bogged down and surrounded, as the troops in Iraq already are. We have just heard the voices of Scott Ritter in our introduction, the former weapons inspector who warned us claims of Iraqi weapons were bogus. Also, President Bush, and from Seymour Hersh. Radio EcoShock has compiled a series of explanations from Ritter and Hersh, taken from a much longer debate on October 16, 2006. It was presented by the New York Society for Ethical Culture and recorded by the New York Sound Posse. You can download the whole debate, 87 minutes long, at www.nysec.org. I'll repeat that web address at the end of this broadcast. For an introduction to the Middle East mess, please download our earlier broadcast titled Four Plots to Nuke Iran from www.ecoshock.org. Choose EcoShock Features from the on-demand audio menu. The whole history of nuclear disarmament and the future of human cities may hang on reactions to fast-moving developments in the Middle East and Washington. Tune in and be watchful. Here we go. In an op-ed in the Los Angeles Times on November 19th, Joshua Moravchik of the American Enterprise Institute simply titled his work, Bomb Iran, Diplomacy is Doing Nothing to Stop the Iranian Nuclear Threat. A show of force is the only answer. Meanwhile, George Bush is calling Iran's President Ahmadinejad a Hitler who must be stopped at all costs. Senior American officials are now saying Israel will not bomb Iranian nuclear facilities because the number of sites is just too large. The job must fall to America. In Israel itself, strong voices are calling for a nuclear strike as soon as possible. An Arutz Shiva article by Shmuel Ben Yehoshua, dated November 26th, says the neutron bomb should be used on Iran to reduce the radioactive fallout that may blow back on Israel. He says, quote, Iran has to be hit hard enough to take the world's breath away, end quote. The principal speaker in our debate today is Scott Ritter, the United Nations weapons inspector, so outspoken about Iraq's lack of nuclear weapons before the American invasion. He's the author of Target Iran, The Truth About the White House's Plans for Regime Change, published by Nation Books this year. He is questioned by Seymour Hersh, the New Yorker magazine columnist and author, who has just published a long article titled The Next Act, Is a Damaged Administration Less Likely to Attack Iran or More? In the New Yorker magazine, November 27, 2006. Ritter begins by saying he is sympathetic to the worry all Jews living in Israel must feel these days.
And I will say this, if I were Israeli, I'd be doing exactly what they're doing. All right, they have a legitimate concern here. Let's not kid ourselves. It's a small little country. And if a nuclear device goes off inside that small little country, Israel ceases to exist as a viable nation state. They can't afford any room for error. There is no margin of error here. That's why Israel's taken the position that not only will they not tolerate an Iranian nuclear weapons program, they will not tolerate nuclear technology that is usable in a nuclear weapons program. In this case, enrichment technology that Iran is permitted to have under Article 4 of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. Israel says, no, if Iran can enrich to levels that are usable in a nuclear reactor, that same technology can be used to enrich to levels usable in a nuclear device. Therefore, the Israeli position is not one spinning rotor, meaning not one centrifuge allowed to operate inside Iran. That's a zero tolerance policy. The standing ovation that Omer gets. Why? Why would he get the standing ovation? Because the United States of America has been preconditioned since 1979 to accept at face value anything negative said about the Islamic Republic of Iran. Now, there's a lot of negative things that can be said about the Islamic Republic of Iran, but unfortunately, by allowing ourselves to create this filter that says we don't recognize anything positive, only the negative, we create the conditions where we don't question negative data. And therefore, when people say Iran is a threat, we agree. And this has been going on since 1979. So the American public, and indeed the American Congress, is preconditioned for war, for confrontation with Iran. That's why we can have a policy that transitions from dual containment under the Clinton administration to regime change under the Bush administration without any significant debate taking place whatsoever. And because this condition exists, There will be war with Iran, unless a little miracle occurs called the Democrats winning Congress, creating enough friction to stop the war in the November elections. But even if that occurs, as you pointed out, there is no separation between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party on the issue of Iran. Everybody sits there and says, wait a minute, we're losing the war in Iraq, and there's 65% of the population that's turned against this war. Certainly we're not going to go to war with Iran. Again, I mean to correct the American public here. 65% of the American public aren't anti-war. They're just anti-losing. You see, if we were winning the war in Iraq, they'd all be for it. If we had brought democracy, they'd be cheering the president. It wouldn't matter that we violated international law. It wouldn't matter that we lied about weapons of mass destruction. We'd be winning. God bless America. Ain't we good? USA, USA. But we're losing. So they're against Iraq. But what happens when you get your butt kicked in one game? You're looking for the next game where you can win. And right now, we're looking for Iran for a victory. We're going to go to war with Iran. When? Not in October.
Ritter says that's because there's more work needed to set up allies and bases in the region prior to the attack. More importantly, both Ritter and Hirsch agree that Presidents Bush and Cheney do not need the Democratic Congress to make an attack on Iran. They already have the power to act unilaterally.
I mean, everybody is aware that after 9/11, Congress pretty much gave the Bush administration a blank check to wage war any way they saw fit, so long as it dealt with the global war on terror. And the president...
Be specific. The October 2002 resolution calling was not just limited to Iraq.
It's a global war on terror.
It gave him the right... He's got a blank check. He does
a blank check to do it. Now,
that's literally correct.
He has to be smart about this. He can wage war, but he needs to ensure that Congress continues to fund the war. So that's why he will go to Congress. He will make the case for Iran. But as I said, Congress is already pre-programmed to nod their head yes and stamp anything he signs. The one little glimmer of hope that's out there, because if we can get a Democratic-controlled Congress that is not afraid to exercise its oversight responsibility and holds hearings where it brings in military professionals and liberates them to speak critically of bad policy, which is the duty and responsibility of every general officer. It's a gross dereliction of duty taking place today in the United States, where our general officers remain mute while they are on active duty. Suddenly, when they retire, they get great courage. They can speak out. But you know what? It's too late. Too many of your men have died.
Hirsch wondered, even when the American population offers no hope of forcing a change of policy, perhaps the Israeli population will demand peaceful means. But he sees yet no sign of a move from that far right towards the center. And then the question on everyone's mind.
If Democrats were to take either the House or the Senate, would they be effective in derailing this freight train?
I think we have our answer. The bottom line is no, because we're not getting rid of the Democrats we need to get rid of. I mean, if Hillary Clinton is reelected, and she will be, she's somebody who is a vocal advocate for forceful confrontation of Iran. So how is empowering the Democratic Party going to change the policy? The key Democrats... Like I said, there is no separation between the key Democrats and the key Republicans on the issue of Iran.
As a former weapons inspector in the International Energy Program, Ritter believes inspection programs do work. He thinks no one is going to be able to create a secret nuclear weapon while inspectors are active within a country.
Is verification possible? Absolutely. The inspection regime that the IAEA is capable of putting together is one of the finest the world has ever seen. They've already proven their capability and their mettle in confronting Iran. They uncovered a sequence of lies and inconsistencies, and at the end of the day, the science won out. That's why we know as much as we do. So let's give these guys their chance. Guess what happens during inspection? Nobody dies. It's a good thing. I like inspections because nobody dies.
The geopolitical implications of an attack on Iran are frightening. Seymour Hirsch worries that a war against Iran may also necessitate a war against Venezuela. Meanwhile, the whole economy could be wrecked when oil from these major producers is suddenly cut off.
Don't forget Caracas, too, because just to talk about how dangerous the world is, if we do hit Iran, there's no question that Chavez will pull his oil off the market.
And there's a real big question. Just to stick another blow, and he sells a couple million barrels a day to American companies under American contract, it's not clear how we, the Bush administration, would respond to Caracas doing that. And so that could be a real mess. It's not, you know, that we could be looking at another serious, that sort of overlooked program. We're not going to tolerate him not fulfilling contracts. The odds are high. You mentioned 2.5 million barrels off the market. He'll take another 2 million off in support.
A question from the floor.
Do you think the Arabs are so anti-Persian that they won't mind Israel and or the U.S. attacking Iran to avoid Iranian hegemony?
Well, you keep on hearing from the people in the administration that, oh, my God, don't worry about it. Secretly and privately, the Saudis and the Egyptians and the Jordanians are saying, bring it on, as they did in 91. They urged us to go in 91, in the first in Gulf War I. So you hear repeatedly that inside the administration, they're getting all sorts of signs that the Sunni leaders of those countries want to see the Shiite regime in Iran, as you say, the Persian, non-Arab, they want to see them diminished.
Ritter agrees.
This is a ray of hope, the silver lining in the cloud. What a Revolutionary Guard guy said, why don't you Americans realize that we hate Arabs more than we hate the Israelis, and that we'd rather work with Israel to contain Arab power than to work with the Arabs to contain Israeli power.
There's a long history, you know, of that.
Yeah, I know, but we don't recognize that. We again, because of our ignorance, we go Muslim. They're all the same. They're not all the same.
How close, in your judgment, are we to the use of atomic weapons?
I'll say this about nuclear weapons. You know, I'm not sitting at the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I'm not in on the planning. I'll take it at face value that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the Joint Chiefs of Staff successfully eliminated nuclear weapons in the initial phase of an operation. But keep in mind this, that the Bush administration has built a new generation of nuclear weapons that we call usable nukes. And they have a nuclear, you know, posture now which permits the preemptive use of nuclear weapons in a non-nuclear environment if the commander-in-chief deems U.S. forces to be at significant risk. If we start bombing Iran, I'm telling you right now, it's not going to work. We're not going to achieve decapitation, regime change, all that. What will happen is the Iranians will respond, and we will feel the pain instantaneously, which will prompt the Bush administration to move to phase two, which will have to be boots on the ground. And we will put boots on the ground. We will surge a number of divisions in, probably through Azerbaijan, down the Caspian Sea coast, in an effort to push the regime over. And when they don't push over, we now have 40,000 troops trapped. We have now reached the definition of significant numbers of U.S. troops in harm's way, and there is no reserve to pull them out. There's no more cavalry to come riding to the rescue. And at that point in time, my concern is that we will use nuclear weapons to break the backbone of Iranian resistance, and it may not work. But what it will do is this. It will unleash the nuclear genie. And so for all those Americans out there tonight who say, you know what, taking on Iran's a good thing. I just told you, if we take on Iran, we're going to use nuclear weapons. And if we use nuclear weapons, the genie ain't going back in the bottle until an American city is taken out by an Islamic weapon in retaliation. So tell me, you want to go to war with Iran? Pick your city. Pick your city. Tell me which one you want gone. Seattle, L.A., Boston, New York, Miami. Pick one, because at least one's going. And that's something we should all think about before we march down this path of insanity that George Bush has us headed on.
And where is China in all this bluster and blunder from the West? America and Israel no longer live in a vacuum of their own design.
Well, let's never forget that China has one of the world's largest developing economies, and they've basically taken their 25-year economic plan and married it, welded it to Iran by basically signing up to $250 billion worth of energy trades over the next 25 years. So China's a big player. They have a vested interest in keeping Iran functioning and keeping Iran viable.
considering the many criticisms by top military men, both retired and active, will the American military follow orders, even to dropping nuclear weapons on Iran? Seymour Hersh, who has interviewed so many of them, including the malcontents, says,
The military will do what the president asks. There's just no question about it. There's no chance whatsoever.
If a U.S. bombing raid were to strike an Iranian nuclear facility, you have already pointed out that this would trigger an exchange, and you've already suggested in your mind that we're going forward willy-nilly. Could you comment on what the prospective environmental consequences would be of such a strike?
The Iranian nuclear program is in such infancy that there's not going to be any environmental impact. I mean, what are we going to scatter around? Concrete? Some steel? You know, when they enrich uranium, they're enriching right now. It's in laboratory scale, bench scale amounts. This isn't a massive effort that's producing massive amounts of enriched material. This is research and development. And so, there's not going to be environmental impact derived from that. That's the lunacy of this all. We're talking about war over nothing. There's nothing there to bomb. There's some concrete. There's some steel. There's a couple centrifuges. There's some spare parts. There's people. Imagine that. When do we stop bombing? When we kill all the people who know how to do this? Do we target every blueprint? Do we target every computer? What are we targeting? Because there is no program to target. Nothing. We'll drop bombs on a few facilities. We'll collapse the buildings. We'll scatter the material. Most of that material will have been moved to another location anyways. And there won't be an environmental impact. And again, that some people say, that's good news. No, ladies and gentlemen, that's the bad news, because it means there's no reason for us to talk about going to war in the first place.
Yeah, but Scott, Curtis LeMay in February of 45, I think that's when, complained bitterly. He'd been doing city bombing in Japan. Remember the firebombing in Tokyo, etc. And he complained in February of 45 that he'd been bombing and bombing. There was nothing left to bomb, and they still fought. And the other point is that once we do the bombing, we're going to be into it. That we're going to have a country that's going to be absolutely rigorously not only wanting revenge, but rigorously fighting us all, and fighting us in a lot of places, including back home.
That'll be the environmental impact, the oil spilling out into the Gulf, the oil spilling out into the ground, and the pollution brought on by the bombing. But I thought the question was about nuclear fallout. There's nothing nuclear to fall out in Iran.
And that's how this dialogue ends, as presented on October 16, 2006, by the New York Society for Ethical Culture. Find them at www.nysec.org. The recording was done by New York Sound Posse at nysoundposse.com and summarized by Alex Smith at Radio EcoShock. That's the Net's only all-environment radio station at www.ecoshock.org. The text version of this podcast can be found in our news blog at www.ecoshock.org/podcast. May peace be upon us. That's it for Radio EcoShock on CFRO Co-op Radio 102.7 FM here in Vancouver, Canada. Tune in via the net at www.cooperadio.org/listen. Join us again next week.